content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Maureen McDonald for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the September 2024 Walter Magazine. We begin with the cover story from the music department, Buffed to a Shine. Fancy Gap's first album is full of polished, hook-filled songs from Charles Crossingham and Stuart McLamb by David Menconi. Years in the making, Fancy Gap's self-titled first album took massive amounts of painstaking effort to pull together. And when the duo of Charles Crossingham and Stuart McLamb were in the latter stages of tweaking the sounds, an unlikely point of comparison emerged. The grueling lengths that director George Lucas had gone to in making the first Star Wars movie. Stuart asked me if it was done yet, Crossingham remembers. And I'd say, almost, but the lightsabers don't look cool enough yet. I mean, you can't release Star Wars unless you have a perfect lightsabers that sparkle and shine. All that detail work definitely paid off because the 10 songs on Fancy Gap from Ghost Choir Records are buffed so fine they practically glisten. The hooks are gargantuan, with vibes landing somewhere between Americana and pure pop, a twangier version of McLamb's previous group, The Love Language, with hints of everyone from Fleetwood Mac to Glen Campbell. While The Love Language is now a well-known band, it started out as the working title for McLamb's solo project. After parting ways with the local band, the Capulets, as well as his girlfriend, in 2006, McLamb retreated to his parents' house in Cary to figure out his next move. Feeling bereft, he wrote songs for solace and began recording them alone. Obsessively magnificent torch songs, in versions that were both low fidelity and operatic, keyed around McLamb's epic wail, they were stunning. McLamb put some of these recordings online via MySpace, and they picked up enough attention that show offers started coming in, even though he didn't have a band to perform with. Hastily assembling musicians for live shows, McLamb released his solo recordings as the group's self-titled 2009 debut album. Love Language members came and went over the next decade, with McLamb the sole constant member. But no matter his collaborators, the results were consistently brilliant across four albums. Work was underway on what was to be the fifth Love Language album when the coronavirus pandemic shut everything down. Unable to record or play live, the band fell apart. But McLamb and Crossingham, who'd been producing the Love Language sessions, kept working as a duo, playing most of the music themselves. Retreating to Crossingham's cabin in the rural environs of Fancy Gap, Virginia, they crafted songs that turned out more polished and rootsy than Love Language. Charles started bringing in what he called cheeseburgers, says McLamb, an opening lyric, a title, a central riff. I don't know the science of it, but it always seemed to work, and we rarely hit any walls musically. As work progressed, McLamb and Crossingham enlisted other musicians to contribute. Adam Lazara from the platinum-selling band Taking Back Sunday and singer-actress Sharon Van Etten both sang choice cameo vocals. And for added musical ambiance, they turned to pedal steel guitarist John Graboff, who has played with everyone from Willie Nelson to Cyndi Lauper, and Foo Fighters keyboardist Rami Jaffe. The luck of the pandemic, Crossingham says with a laugh. Everyone's schedule was open, and they were bored. Pedal steel and Hammond B3 organ are drony textural instruments that add so much liveliness. John and Rami were the secret sauce, floating through the sound like a bird in the sky above or an orca underwater below. They didn't compete with the economy of noise going on with Stu's voice. For live shows, including this month's Hopscotch Music Festival, they've put together an all-star band of locals. Ex-Benfolds 5 bassist Robert Sledge, Backsliders guitarist Steve Howell, the Old Ceremony keyboardist Mark Simonson, and well-traveled drummer Nick Baglio. And while the love language never officially broke up and might ride again someday, Fancy Gap is very much McLam's focus right now. Never say never, McLam says, but I feel like another Fancy Gap record is more on the horizon than another love language album. That's where all cylinders are firing nowadays. One difference between the two bands is perspective. Compared to the desperation McLam evoked in the love language, Fancy Gap is downright modest. When the world starts over, he sings in the album opening first single, How to Dance, I just want to be in the band. There have been times in the past, McLam acknowledges, when he leaned a little too heavily on real-life drama to fuel songwriting inspiration. But he's married nowadays, in a better place emotionally than he was for many of the love language years. Life experiences inform good songs, and there's always a tinge of that, McLam says. It's hard for me to write a completely happy song because life's not one-dimensional. Hope, bitterness, and excitement are always creeping into what I'm writing, but I don't believe I have to suffer for it anymore. I can take pain and translate it into music without feeling like I have to fit drama into my life. Next, from the shop department, Style Solutions. These NC State grads turned a shared love of fashion into a thriving rental business, by Rachel Simon. 2.5 years ago, Emmy Weiland and Amelia Zahn were in their sophomore year at North Carolina State University when they found themselves dealing with the same problem that plagues countless college students worldwide. They needed to make some money. Unlike many of their peers, neither woman had any interest in spending their weekends babysitting or tutoring for extra cash. Instead, they decided to put their shared love of fashion together with their marketing major skills. They used Instagram to rent their friends' dresses out to classmates and took a percentage of the fee for themselves. The response, says Weiland, was immediate. We realized that we tapped into a market that no one had yet before, adds on. The primary reason their business model appealed to customers was that shoppers could try on as many dresses as they wished before renting them. This ensured that customers didn't end up with gowns that didn't fit or look like the photos, a frustrating experience both Weiland and Zahn had numerous times through well-known rental companies like Rent the Runway or Newly, which operate largely online and often require pricey subscriptions. We would waste $100 on something that we couldn't even wear, recalls Weiland. Once the duo realized there was such high demand for try-on rentals, opening a storefront was the clear next move. So in the summer of 2022, Weiland and Zahn used their prior earnings and investors' funds to launch Trendland, an in-person rental boutique operating out of a small warehouse in Cary. Initially, they focused on renting out dresses, bought wholesale, to fellow college students who, like them, often had needed formal wear for events, but had limited budgets to work with. Shoppers could come into the store to try on and rent stylish options from high-end designers like Nicole Miller or Runaway the Label for as low as $10 or $15. With the launch of Trendland's website, customers could also order looks online and have them shipped directly to their homes. After they wore the rented pieces, they returned them to the store, where the clothes got washed and inspected before going back on the racks for new customers to borrow. Despite little advertising, we honestly have not spent a single dollar on marketing, Zahn says. It wasn't long before word about Trendland got out. In the months following the warehouse launch, droves of shoppers, including high schoolers readying for prom, college girls looking for outfits for formals, and women looking for dresses to wear to weddings, galas, and other events, found their way to the store. Business boomed enough that in August 2023, Weiland and Zahn left the warehouse and opened a true storefront on Cary's Chapel Hill Road. The space is manned solely by the founders, who do everything from cleaning to accounting. Here, customers can browse hundreds of dresses, along with some tops, jumpsuits, and rompers, in a large number of styles and an inclusive size range. Right now, we have the widest variety of special occasion wear that's not bridal and pageant in the area, Zahn says proudly. Shoppers can also take advantage of Trendland's backup dress service, which allows them to rent a second style or size for a significant discount, as well as purchase optional insurance to cover potential damage. Anyone looking to rent several items for the same time period can create a bundle that'll give them a percentage off their order. I've had women drive from South Carolina or Virginia and come in and say, "You're the only store on the East Coast that offers this," says Zahn. "We definitely try to offer a little bit of everything for everyone," Weiland adds. Olivia Martin, a college student and frequent Trendland shopper, says she often rents from the store when she's in need of a, quote, wow moment for parties and vacations. "The dresses are always so unique and pieces I wouldn't find myself," says Martin, adding that the rental outfits' low costs are another key draw. "I love not having to commit to the full price of a dress that I'll only wear once." Trendland's success has not come without its challenges, of course. The women had to balance full-time careers with schoolwork while they were students. They graduated this past spring and now work full-time on the business. Their age and lack of experience have also garnered plenty of skepticism from those who don't believe or appreciate that the duo know how to run a business. "I can't tell you how many times people came into our store and looked at me and said, 'So what do you want to do after college?' And I'd have to say, 'Oh, this,'" Weiland says with a laugh. "They're so taken aback by it. Because of our age, people just automatically assume that this is just something we're doing for fun right now," Zahn echoes. But the founders have big plans for Trendland's future. They've already outgrown the Cary location and just opened a second location in August in the Maker's Alley in the North Hills Innovation District. "The exposure from this location will finally allow us to make the kind of money where we can grow and invest in ourselves while continuing investing in the company," says Zahn. They'd also love to expand the styles of clothing Trendland offers and feature some items for sale, an option customers have frequently expressed interest in. When we first started, we didn't think it was going to be anything serious. We thought it was just going to be a little side thing we did, San reflects. But, she continues, every day we have people coming in for the first time, and they always say, we had no idea this existed. This is so cool, and we can't wait to tell people about it. Next, Savoring the Sea. The North Carolina Oyster Trail connects Raleigh to a statewide effort to support and enjoy our coastal delicacies by Anne-Monique Clark. Few ingredients taste so much like the place they come from, says Chef Sean Fowler of Mandolin in Raleigh. But oysters truly offer the essence of their environment. Their taste, texture, and aroma directly connect you to the sea. I love everything about them, agrees Chef Sonny Gerhardt of St. Rock Fine Oysters and Bar. Oysters are so versatile, you can really do so much. St. Rock and Mandolin are just two of a handful of triangle stops on the North Carolina Oyster Trail, a collection of more than 80 sites across the state that offer experiences like seafood markets, shellfish farms that are open for touring, and restaurants that serve North Carolina oysters year-round. Established in 2020, the trail is administered by the North Carolina Sea Grant, a National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration program based at NC State, the North Carolina Coastal Federation, and the North Carolina Shellfish Growers Association. It's an effort to raise awareness about the many benefits of these farm-raised mollusks. We're trying to connect the dots between people who farm oysters and people who eat them, says Lynn Peterson, the co-founder of Local Seafood. Oyster farming is unique in that it's one of the few agricultural techniques that actually improves the environment. Everything we grow on land, corn, cotton, cows, pigs, they take from the land. We have to add nutrients back once we harvest them, says Peterson. But oysters actually clean the water. It's the greenest form of farming there is. These animals are filtering hundreds of gallons of water each day. Farmed oysters are raised in cages or floating bags in the ocean. Farming takes the pressure off of wild mollusks. All you have to do to grow them is put them in the water, says Jane Harrison, a coastal economic specialist with the North Carolina Sea Grant. A great benefit is that these farmed bivalves can be harvested year-round, contrary to the often quoted rule about only eating oysters in the R months, a recommendation that comes from two fronts. One is from efforts to avoid depleting wild populations, which reproduce in warmer months. There are a lot of restrictions on wild oysters so they can restore their populations, says Harrison. The other is that these raw foods carry a risk of contamination from a naturally occurring bacteria called Vibrio, which multiplies in warm conditions. That risk is mitigated by regulations that stipulate the range of water temperatures acceptable for harvest, as well as cooling and storage practices once the mollusks are out of the water. We allow Mother Nature to grow great oysters for us, laughs Cody Fison, who runs Ghost Fleet Oyster Company with his wife Rachel. They're based in Hampstead, where they moved in 2019 after living in Raleigh. They found that this type of farming combined his passion for fishing with her background as an environmental scientist. Ghost Fleet was among the first such companies to offer tours of its operations to guests. We always knew that ecotourism and agritourism would be a huge component of what we wanted to do, Fison says. On their tours, they walk guests through a day in the life of an oyster farmer, showing them how bags and cages are set, explaining the difference between farmed and wild species, and talking them through the harvest process. Guests can't engage in farming activities. It is a regulated agricultural activity, after all, but can get off the boat and walk around. It's an authentic moment of time in the marsh, says Fison. And we end the tour with shucking and eating oysters, of course. Which leads back to the taste. These delicacies can be salty, earthy, buttery, or have notes of indescribable umami flavors. We grow the same species all up and down the eastern seaboard, but when you pull them out of the water, they're completely different, says Peterson. The shell color, the shapes, the flavor, all that is influenced by the environment where the oyster is raised. It's like a grape. You can plant the same Chardonnay vine in North Carolina, California, or France, and it'll taste totally different. Farmers have learned to control the flavors of the mollusks by moving them as they grow or tumbling them to change the shape of the shell. Farmers can even harvest when the delicacies have reached a restaurant's preferred size. St. Roch may want a medium or small oyster to offer cocktail style, but Hummingbird will want a larger one to charbroil, says Peterson. The North Carolina coast naturally offers varied environments to create all these flavor profiles. We have a lot of different salinity levels and different types of water bodies that are good environments, and even the same environment can fluctuate with the wind and the tides, says Peterson, who supplies various Triangle area restaurants. For example, Stump Sound on the northwest side of Topsail Island breeds high salinity oysters because it's close to inlets that bring in salt water. Currituck Selects, which are raised near Germantown on the Pamlico Sound, are the same species, but they grow in an area with much lower salinity, so tasters may detect a cleaner flavor. We've got the word terroir to describe the land where a crop comes from, but people are becoming more familiar with the idea of the miroir, understanding what part of the sea a food product comes from, says Peterson. Another prong of the North Carolina Oyster Trail involves supporting the sustainability of both farming operations and wild populations. One way they do this is through shell recycling, in which the shells, or culch, are used to build the reefs that wild oysters grow on. It takes lots of time and effort, but we're always in the mindset of sustainability, says Fison. We want to make sure things like clean water and fresh oysters are around for our kids and for many generations to come. Since 2020, the partners of the trail have planted more than 22 million bushels of culch material for wild populations. The North Carolina Sea Grant also offers resources like training and technical assistance to anyone who wants to get into the industry. Oyster farming is a sustainable way to serve and consume a wonderful ingredient that has long been an important part of North Carolina's food culture. It's good for the environment and an excellent way to support the local economy, says Fowler, who has these delicacies on the menu at Mandolin year-round. They help preserve an important culinary resource for generations to come and help preserve the health of our state's ocean and waterways. This article was edited for Time. Next up, a poem, A Dance in the Field by Cassandra May Howell. In the midst of a field of the chirping songs of the crickets, in the lulling of the sun, a flood of assured dancers flash among the waving grasses. Diligent to the arcs and flashes, with waltz and frolic rising and falling, the youthful hunter gleefully follows its prey, and all dance to a new rhythm of the breast. The sweeping beauty of the dancers on the bounding range of the floor foretell the celestial bodies to come and tickle the hunter's fancy in the waning day. Some dancers fade, lost to the twilight and the heavens, only to flash just beyond reach, leaving others caught between the gentle hands. Their feet weighed lightly in the grasp. And while glowing in cadence to the heart, the fingers unlock, letting the light take flight. A spark of beauty to strike anew when the dancers leap and prophesy the stars again. And from the calendar, there'll be a fall open garden and seed sale, September 21st, 12 to 4 p.m. Foodscaping pioneer and horticulturist Bree Arthur is hosting an open garden and seed sale at her home in Fuquay, Varina. Shop cool season flowers, vegetables, and cover crops with seed available from dozens of plants, including larkspur, poppies, bachelor's button, radish, carrot, and red clover. This event requires no registration and does run rain or shine, promising inspiration for the upcoming growing season. Bree Arthur's property is two lots at 7624 and 7628 Troy Stone Drive in Fuquay, Varina, or visit breegrows.com for more information. We've run out of time for today's episode of Walter Magazine. Be sure to tune in next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Maureen McDonald for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Walter Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.